Welcome to another episode of the Snugcast with me, Michael Noonan.
Hi guys, how are you?
It's me, Owen, and Michael Noonan. And I'm joined here tonight with Big Dave Quinn and Paul Power, a friend of mine from school. And we're without for the first time ever. I think we're episode 37 here tonight. And we're first time ever without my co-host DJ. So look, if you want to give a minute silence for DJ, you can pause the podcast here for a minute and say a few prayers for him.
May he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace. DJ is dead. But yeah, look, we're here tonight in Grady's yard, and it's a Wicklow Wolf tap takeover tonight. So later on in the episode, you'll hear from two of the brewers, Quincy Fenley from Wicklow Wolf, and you'll also hear from Declan Nixon from Yellow Belly Beer. So the two boys are on later on, and fuck, we had a great old chat with them. So Paul's just arriving back from the bar now with a few tasty pints. Paul, how are you getting on tonight?
Not bad.
Yeah, good stuff yourself. Great introduction to the pod. So, as always, I would like to thank all our listeners for listening to us. And as always, guys, just would you give us a few comments, a few likes, a few shares on social media? It really helps spread the word of the Snugcast. So as always, we're going to start off tonight with a little round the table of what are you drinking tonight. So I'll start with you, Big Dave. What are you drinking?
Well, Tom, I'm drinking a beautiful collaboration between Yellow Belly and Wicklow Wolf. It's called Super Soaker.
I know, fuck. It's so easy to nearly say Super Split. Because
I know, I had to think about that a few times there before I said it. But
because it fucking tastes like one.
It is a split of a Super Split. It's really citrusy, really juicy flavors. It almost tastes like it's a citra hop in there. But yeah, it's blood orange. It's very drinkable. And the best thing is, it's only, 2.7 ABV or something like that?
Something
so it's very, very light.
2.1, I think.
2.1, yeah. And you can drink it all night.
Yeah, it's like
delish.
I'd say you could drive the old car home, could you?
What, on three? Four no more, I think. Is that the saying, is it?
Yeah. Four is fine, I think, is it? Yeah.
Five no more. And I'm on the bike tonight, so I can have the sixth one, I know.
Yeah. So yeah, look, I'm on the same as well. It's a pure taste of a pint. Like, I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, as you say, like, so fucking drinkable. And we've kind of guzzled down a few here now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like literally been kind of necking them. Like, they're so fucking tasty. And this low percentage thing, like, it's really catching on.
Like, it's kicking off, isn't it? And I think. And potentially also the alcohol-free beers as well. They do a really good one here called, is it Mickle? Can you remember the name of that?
Oh,
Mickle,
man, I had it one night, yeah. It was absolutely tasty. It, I was.
33 centiliter bottle, beautiful label, and it's one of the most flavorsome beers that I've ever drank, and it's alcohol-free. It's also gluten-free. But I think that's why things are possibly going, like the lower percentage session ales as opposed to the big 5-point whatever heavy high alcohol content. But like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, even I was noticing there at the taps above that Wicklow Wolf have this low percentage coffee ale, and it's called, I think it's called Moonlight Low.
Yeah, it's 1%.
It's 1%, yeah. And that's class. Imagine going out like an old coffee ale, like, you know, that's absolutely savage. And like, I don't know, I think as well, like, you definitely fucking need a few kind of low percentage beers to come out, like, because I hate when you have to drive or you're fucking, like, you want to go out in the sesh, like, you know, but you don't want to be there with a fucking, an old tin of Sidona or something, like, you know, at the table, you know, you don't want to be a fucking idiot, like, you know, whereas, you can have one of these and drink. You can have one
you're
of these.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Is everything okay, Tom?
Yeah.
You're not drinking.
Well, look, I need to drink. I just need to drink, all right?
Happened earlier, but can I talk about it? Like,
yeah. Anyway, Paul, what are you on there tonight?
I'm on the Yellow Belly Red Noir. It's I think it's 5%. It's kind of it's a red ale with a kind of a coffee taste to it as well. It's just a fucking
it's
job.
It's really like a Smithwick's, is it?
Nah,
no.
It's kind of much heavier than the Smiddags. You definitely feel it. Like, I've had three now and it's sitting well, you know? You get a bit of a buzz off it. But it's good.
So, like, heavier in like both senses of the word, taste and the headspace.
Oh,
fuck. Let's get on this.
Takes up a bit, like.
We're on like the complete opposite here then.
Yeah,
I'm sober to judge.
I'm fucked.
So the topics on for tonight's show, right, are just fucking pure muck as usual, like, you know, we're talking absolute shite. But I think they've both been suggested by our sick co-host, DJ. So the first one is, what's your biggest fear, right? So I'll go first, right? So for me, I've always had like, it's not irrational because you can like die from it, but like drowning. And I also have quite a, like, I've had a pretty big fear of water for years, like, right? So like, literally like, when I was growing up and like going for fucking swimming lessons in school and stuff, like, I used to be like pretend to be sick and all this shit, like, you know, like, you know, like, oh, like, you know, like putting the head by the fucking kettle and all this, like trying to get a temperature and all this shit, like just trying to like pull myself out of fucking swimming lessons. But I when I was there, like just like hated, I actually didn't really like hate the water that much or anything, but it was my putting my head under the water. So like that was like a huge thing with like swimming lessons as well. It was, they were like, you know, like, oh, make sure you're like your face down and you're, you know, you're breathing fucking, you know, every, you know, basically putting your head under water and like breathing every
just
now
keep
again.
Breathing normally, just swallow in half the ocean.
Hated the fucking thing.
Keep your head open.
But like, I think that was like nearly a thing where like in my own head I got built up so badly with the fucking thing that like I couldn't actually function, and I would end up doing something stupid like that where I'd like inhale through my nose and then have a big panic attack and be like,
is that not what a fear is? Like, it's something that's built up to a level in your own head that you can't actually get over yourself.
Oh yeah. And like, even like, I suppose like in terms of that, like, I don't know, is it a phobia as well? I don't know. But I've actually become much better with it and like have like fucking jumped off waterfalls and all this shit, and like I don't give a shit about that anymore. Like, well, I still wouldn't be that comfortable with like swimming per se like that, like doing lengths of the pool, putting my head on the water.
I've seen you
something.
Skinny dipping down woods still, buddy. I was hanging out straight in the ocean.
Yeah, kept my head above water though. Yeah.
The cheeks were above as well. I seen them, right? Yeah. Glistening in the moonlight.
But like, I actually think what my fear has stemmed from has been like, so you know that out in Splash World out in Tremore?
Did you get caught in a big blue, or is it a red and green slide, wasn't it?
So no, not the slides, right? It's like the lazy river, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when I was younger, I went into the lazy river with me dad, and we were like just kind of going around the two of us, right? Then on one occasion, dad was like, oh, I'll wait here and you go around and I'll catch you on the other side. So I went around, right? Went around the fucking thing, right? Dad, I don't know what the fuck he's doing. He's probably just chatting to someone or something fucking stupid.
I'll see you later, son.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm off out the pool there.
So anyway, I like got caught in the lazy river, got whipped out of the thing, down like hit like, you know those like dividers of the lanes and stuff, like hit one of them, got like swept underwater down into the like the very bottom of the deep end.
And then next thing, the wave machine.
Dad was like still chatting away to some young one, I'd say. Like,
you know? I love the tail, yeah.
Exactly. Then like, so completely missed me, like, I think like then a lifeguard was about to jump in. He finally caught wind of me like underwater, ripped me out of it, like up against a wall, like terrible, right? Second reason why I think it also happened, flip side with me dad. We were in Florida one year, and we went to one of these like Disney water parks. So there was like a sign up saying like that the depth of this pool is like 5 to 6 feet or something like that. So dad, who's also an atrocious swimmer, went on a slide, and he came down off the slide and he went to go and touch the bottom, right? So, well, he thought it was like 5 to 6 feet. So then you go touch the bottom. But the sand of, like, this is like, this is all like man-made beaches and man-made things or whatever. Yeah. The sand on the bottom of the thing had been like wiped away in that bit where he went down. So it was like about 8 feet, like, right? So Dad like went down to like touch the bottom, kick himself back up.
Yeah.
Like couldn't reach the bottom and then just didn't really know, panicked. Yeah. Yeah. And then didn't know what to do, like. So like, there was like this scene where it was like, do you know where that kind of like the shark in Jaws like clasps a girl and she's been like dragged around and her arms are like waving about. Exactly, right? So it was like that, except obviously without the moving around, but like Dad was like waving his arms like frantically, right? So it was me and my uncle who were there, and my uncle started bursting his hole laughing because he thought Dad
waving
was
back at him.
Waving back. He thought Dad was taking the piss, right? But I was like, I knew that Dad wasn't going to be taking the piss of this. So I started doing like, you know, I was kind of like fucking Baywatch,
shark
kind
in
of.
The water. Clear the beach.
Yeah. No, I was like fucking David Hasselhoff, like, right?
So
like
straight in,
like. Like tore over, like started like swimming over, grabbed Dad. Dad was like about fucking, I don't know, 15, 16 stone, like me trying to rip
not
him
you,
as a
not shredded on the rise 10 years.
That,
let's go. Small.
But yeah, I was like trying to pull that out of the water. And like kind of got his head a bit above water, dragged him out along, and then finally my uncle kind of realized that
was
this wasn't a fucking piss take. So yeah. So yeah, you can see why I suppose I might have had maybe one or two traumatic experiences.
How old were you when you went to Florida?
I was
when that happened.
10.
Yeah.
That'll
definitely
that'll do
leave
it.
An impression.
Yeah.
Just dragging my father out of the sea at 10 years old.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my biggest fear. Dave, have you've been rubbing your chin there and
yeah, I've been thinking, and I suppose for me water would be a I'd always respect water. I suppose it's
the respect.
The power of the ocean. You just can't.
Oh,
you can never take it for granted.
Fuck you,
for sure, like, but for me, like my biggest fear would be snake. How did you know? I won't go into my backstory. Yeah, for me, it would be snakes and rats.
Yeah,
I just and like I unfortunately I don't have like an elaborate story like why I have a fear about those two things, but just I freak out when like living. As you know, I do a bit of gardening. It's one of my pastimes. And like I do see you see the odd rat in the garden like from a distance, especially around your compost heap and stuff. And when I see it, I just freak out. I have to like leave the garden. I had to go inside, kind of just after like almost like
he's
the rat is back.
Get the fucking SWAT team down for this.
We need the armed response. We need the regional armed response unit in my back garden right now.
Bring the MP5s, extra ammo.
I obviously that has a history. Rat spread disease, the Black Plague. It has a spread.
Was it all fucking debunked though?
What really?
Rats.
It was water, was it?
I think it was just like people. They blamed the rats because they
people
were all just like
cowl, like
they were, yeah, they were all just filthy cons. Like, pretty bad.
But obviously it's stuck on the rat, like, and for the
scapegoat, why not?
And for me, it's just there, and I'm like, whenever I see it, I'm like, oh fuck, I can't eat anything out of my garden because it's been fucking there. And anyway, it's the rat and snakes as well.
And what?
Why snakes?
Snakes? They're just like spineless, like slimy. They can fucking kill you. No, I would never touch one.
They're not slimy at all.
No, but they look slimy.
Fair enough, they are pretty shiny, I guess.
And particularly those big ones like the boar restrictors. Like, do you hear that story about the small kids in like Australia where the I don't even know what kind of killer snake they have in Australia, but it got in through the aircon down into the bed and like killed the two kids in bed and like it just. Yeah,
that's
so.
Australia,
yeah, well, I like, yeah. Fucking plants can kill you over there.
Yeah.
Too much beer and sun as well. But like, so that's my two biggest fears.
And what about like, say, reptile? Like, have you ever gone to?
Yeah, like iguanas like, and stuff like that. Yeah, I wouldn't be a big fan of reptiles in general. I suppose. Yeah.
What about like arachnids or like millipedes or.
Or even dogs without any hair, I fucking hate them as well.
Like all life
just
forms.
Kind of, yeah.
Keep them away from me. I'm done.
Yeah, but I suppose I don't have that many fears. But those would be two that would be kind of like that would be noted in my mind that that I take note and take cognizance of, I suppose. Anyway.
Cool. And Paul, what about you?
Fucking spiders, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I swear to God, like, definitely a massive phobia of spiders, because I must have been about seven. I distinctly remember, like, me and two of my other next-door neighbours at the time, like, where I grew up, we were, like, playing in my back garden, and one of the neighbours, like, picked up, he had, like, six or seven big spiders in a fucking bucket for whatever reason, and just threw them at me, right? But I was like, I could feel something crawling up my leg. I was like, what the fuck is that? And I looked down and I was like, oh my God, I could just see like these four spiders on my chest, like running at my face. And I just fucking lost it. Like, I was like tearing off my clothes and just fucking just like brushing them off. I remember I couldn't get rid of them. And it like, the guy who did it was laughing, but my other like best friend at the time was just like, what the fuck? And just bet the shit out of your man who threw him at me. And I was like, oh, that's why you're my best friend, mate. That's why you're my best friend. Because the three of us at the time were like really, really good friends. But that fucking, yeah, ever since then, I just can't handle them at all.
Yeah, I'm sorry about a session you were at there, you went to one of your friend's houses.
Oh, yeah, that was only a couple of weeks ago, yeah. But I have a better one than that again, right? So I think it was about probably 2 years ago. My girlfriend at the time rang me like bawling, crying, being like, "Oh, like you need to come over." She was living in some old. It was like an old apartment complex that I don't know was built like the fucking the 20s or the 30s. Or it used to be like an old folks' home or some shit.
It kind of looks like Shutter Island.
Yeah, it looks awful. Like it's full of fucking just rodents and insects and shit or whatever. But. She rang me like bawling, crying, like, "Oh, can you come over? Like, there's a massive spider in the sitting room. Like he's actually huge." And normally when people tell you that, like, they're like, "Ah, yeah, he's probably fucking the size of a euro or something. He's probably he's not that big at all." I was like, "Look, like, what do you want me to do? If I come over, I'm just gonna be like, oh, I can't fucking go near the thing anyway." She's like, "No, like, please come over." I was like, "Nah, I'm not fucking." All right, fine, I'll come over. So I got over to the apartment like about 10 minutes later. And the door was wide open. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? So I was like, hello? And she answered me. She's like, yeah, well, like, I'm in the kitchen. I was like, okay. So I walk in. I was like, where is he? She's like, he's behind the door. I was like, is that why it's open? She's like, yeah, I couldn't look at him. So the fucking door, the whole door like, was like wide open. I was like, all right, fucking hell. So I went over and I pulled the door back. And I swear to God, the thing was the size of my fucking hand. And I was like, nah, I'm done. I'm actually done. I was like, pretty much trying to run out the door. She was like, no, don't leave. I was like, fucking hell. So the two of us just stood in our kitchen staring at him, like waiting for it to move. And you know, I don't know what it is. It's just about like the movement of the spider. Like you see one of their legs, like they just kind of twitch or they move like really quick. And you just see all their appendages move at once. You're like, oh, you fucking little shit. Like,
that needed the armed response.
Yeah, it fucking, yeah. This needed a fucking nuke. I was about to call Trump and be like, here, look, Hiroshima part two, let's go. Like, drop it in Manor Village or whatever the fuck it was. I can't remember. But I remember like texting one or two of the lads being, look, I know I'm a little bitch, but like, can you do me a favor? Like, if you're in town, can you just come down to my girlfriend's house to kill this spider? They're like, oh, you fucking, you little pussy, like a little spider. And I was like, I wouldn't fucking ask you if it wasn't like a big deal, you know, that kind of way. So they were all like, nah, fuck off, deal with it yourself. So I was like, fuck's sake. So eventually she rang her dad, who was in town at some meeting or whatever. And he was like, yeah, I'll be over in about 10 minutes. I'll be free before I go home. So he came over and the two of us were still in the kitchen and he walked in, right? And he was like, well, where is it? And I was like, it's behind the door, John. And he was like, okay, yeah. Pull the door back and was like, oh, he's a big fella, isn't he? And I was like, he fucking is, yeah, he's fairly big. So he pulled the fucking door back, went to catch him in his hand to pick him up.
He was too fucking big for his hand. The spider falls down, straight down on the floor, and starts like fucking making a go for the kitchen where I'm standing. I was like, nah, I'm not having this. So I just fucking hopped up on the countertop and was like trying to get out the window. I was like, fuck this, I'm going over. I was like freaking out because it was just like immediate like fight or flight kind of thing. I was like, yeah, I'm fucking gone. I'm out of here. Like, I can't deal with this thing. And then he ran over and scooped him up.
In his hand,
and in his two hands, he like cupped him over in his hands.
And his one hand was obviously small.
It was too fucking small for him. Oh. And he put him outside. And I was like, oh God, I was like, I don't know how you do that, boy. And he's like, oh, you know, like, I'm terrified of spiders as well, but you do atting for your kids, wouldn't you? And I was like, nah, like, that just solidified me right there. I was like, I'm never having kids. Like, I'd never be able to fucking do that. But I said to him, I was like, where'd you leave him? He's like, oh, I just put him out in the grass out there. I was like, he's going to be back in here in about 10 minutes. Looking for a bit of warmth. I was like, why would you do that? I would just kill him. Just fuck, or throw him away. Put him over the other side of the apartment complex. Like, it'd be done. But
and then you broke up with the girlfriend.
Yeah. I was like, that's it. Final straw. Don't ever talk to me again. No, like,
your
man,
father has touched a spider.
there was like multiple times where I'd stay over there, whatever, and there'd be one in the room. It, obviously, I'd never ever seen a spider like that scale since or even before then. He was fucking huge, but like there'd be one on the ceiling or something. That like whole apartment complex was just infested with them. Like they were like the big hunting spiders as well. They're those black, like thick black ones. I was like, oh fuck off, they're fucking shit. But the worst one was, it was like this, it wasn't even that big, but it crawled up on the pillow between the two of us one night sleeping. I was like, here, I was like, oh fuck, I'm going home. Like, fuck this shit. Like, it was awful. Yeah, I was never so happy when she moved from her. Like, I was fucking delighted.
Lads, thanks a million for your honesty. That is, we have some very shook faces in front of us here.
I need a point after that.
Alright, okay, we're going to go for a quick point break. Right, we're well lubricated again. And we're going back to another DJ topic. He's fucking, this man is missing this podcast so much.
He has his fingerprints all over it.
I know, yeah. But so DJ's next topic is, what is your worst experience of public transport? Big Dave, I'm going to come to you first. Do you have a good one?
Just got to clear the throat for this one. Well, it's not actually my worst experience. It was probably a very bad experience for everyone else but me and probably 80 other people.
Okay.
So I went on Erasmus to Italy, lived in Pisa for a year. Pisa's relatively medium-sized town, probably like 50,000 people, maybe 60,000, and 15,000 of those, 20,000 of those are students, right? Big student population. I probably got the figures like horrendously wrong there. But once a month, we did this thing.
1 billion people.
So once a month, we did all the Erasmus students got together. And we met at the central train station on a Friday evening and got the last train into Florence. Sessioned all night and got the first train back to Pisa in the morning. So like stocked up with a load of cans, vodka, whatever on the train in. So this one time it was kind of like a new train. It was like kind of like, you know, big windows, really kind of like, it's kind of like a Lewis but like bigger and a little bit more comfortable. So if you can imagine, so it's like Pisa's Centrale, central station, and then it stopped at the airport and then it went on to Florence. So 100 Larry Erasmus students piled onto the train, drink concealed, and once it started going, like neck and cans, like hanging out of the handrails, a ghetto blaster going,
a few games.
Yeah. And then stopped at the train station, all the tourists got on, and it was just like session, like it's fucking hardcore session from there to Florence, right?
How long was that?
It was an hour. Oh, so,
no toilet,
no nothing, right?
Oh, jeez.
And there were a few occasions that lads may have pissed against the doors and whatever. I never, ever ever did that.
We're winking a lot here, Dave.
What? But anyway, I can't remember. I used to travel that route very a lot. Like, there was like a, I don't know, like a point. I don't know what the technical term is. Like a point or an intersection where the train would wait for 10 minutes so the points changed and then it could go on just outside Florence. Yeah, exactly. Or like it had to wait for another train to pass.
All right, Dave, no one cares. Come on.
Yeah, but it's part of the story, right?
All right, okay.
Because we're stuck here not moving. Everyone started getting like fucking leery and very agitated and then started rocking the train, right? Because it was kind of one of those trains that you could rock. So we were rocking the train. It was probably going... two or three on? Oh yeah, like there was like oi oi oi, a lot of that. And like probably 2 or 3 feet, and I say some of the locals that were on the train and tourists were getting, well, they were fearing for their safety, so
probably would, like
they would, yeah, yeah, yeah. The train is fucking rocking, like it's listing a foot inside,
if not more,
yeah, and obviously 80 people doing it,
probably closer to 100, like. So I reckon at this stage the driver up front
again,
felt,
if you were not part of
no that. I was sitting on my own, so minding my own business.
Hey guys, stop
playing
that.
Cards, just shooting the breeze.
Please guys,
I do not approve.
So I'm sure the driver probably felt this list as well and radioed ahead to Florence train station. Anyway, the train kind of went in on at a strange platform that none of us had ever been on before. And we take the route quite often. And in Italy, there's like several different grades of police. Like, so you have finance police, you have forestry police, you have municipal police, but then you have like this like hardcore, like almost quasi militaristic police called the Carabinieri.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're the guys with like, they look like not like they wear the like, yeah, basically,
yeah.
So we got off the train and both ends of the platform were blocked with the Carabinieri Land Rovers. They had the dog squad and they had like fucking machine guns waiting for us when we got off. They put us into single file strips, like not strips, but like patted us all down, took all the drink off us, and literally just tried to put the fear of God into every single one of us, and they succeeded.
Yeah.
So that's basically my story of my worst experience of public transport, ending with the strip search with the military police in Italy.
Oh,
so
good story though.
Yeah, that's it. So this was a message, take home message for the listener is, don't shake trains in Italy, don't get absolutely anossified, and just try to get away with it, I suppose. Yeah,
class. Fuck, that's a really good one. That's a really good one. Paul, do you want to follow that?
Nah, not even at all, like.
No,
I can't follow that. You're joking me, like getting stopped by the fucking anti-terrorism force in fucking Italy.
You just had a grudge.
Yeah, I just had a grudge in fucking bus driver going out to Tremor like over Christmas. It was obviously after having a shit Christmas, had a load of people going out to have a good time out in Tremor, and he just had a fucking shit time the whole way out. It was like, everyone sit the fuck down. He did about 90 out the road when it was like a 60 hour zone. He was flooring it. People were like smashing on the stop button. He was having none of it. He was just doing his own route, stopping whenever he wanted to. So the second it got even close to tomorrow, I just jumped off, and then I saw him about 10 minutes later when I was walking up to the pub, like come back around, and he just still had the most pissed off head, and half people were still on the bus. I was like, yeah, they're all going to die. Like, I'm so happy I got off that 20 minutes ago. It's fucking grim.
It must be such a fucking terrible job.
No way I could do it. Like,
no.
Such a thankless, soul draining, like monotonous. You're doing the exact same route every day.
Stop. Actually, you know what's really annoying? Have you ever like parked in Dublin, one of the Dublin airport car parks, or even Quick Park or something like that, up at like the airport, and like they have like the bells on the bus for no reason because they stop fucking everywhere anyway.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like they only have like
two,
like they only
two
have two
stops.
Like, yeah. Yeah, two or three stops, right? So like you always just have, they're always like cramped as well, like, you know, and like the buttons are like kind of like they're kind of like kind of like an outy belly button, like, you know, they're like, so they're very easy to press, right? So you just have some owl lad just like leaning up against the pole,
smashing.
And was smashing it constantly, like, you know. And like, so the bus driver is just like constantly just like beep beep, like, oh, it's annoying for you as like someone who's just using it, but like imagine like
doors are opening, step away from the
oh,
door.
Oh, stop. So
that's just like stuck in your head.
It's so bad.
I'd say when they go to sleep, all they hear is that. It's like,
step away from the doors. The doors are opening. Step away from the doors.
I gotta put my urban planning hat on. It's such a vital service that we need to. I think as sorry, I'm gonna go like philosophical on it. That we as a society need to use more. I think like we have to get away from like jumping in our cars and like try to use and avail of the service. And
oh yeah,
they provide such a worthwhile service.
But, I know, but like,
but yeah, the, you can't get away from it. Like it is.
There also needs to be more of those public yeah. transport services. So, like I read a good quote about you know that M7 lane extension. And they were like saying that like basically the quote was people who think putting an extra lane onto a motorway or onto a roadway is going to solve congestion.
It's a problem. It's going to cause more.
But they made a metaphor that it's similar to people who think that putting an extra notch on a belt is going to solve obesity.
Like that's actually a really good analogy.
It might. Yeah. I can have 5 more Kit Kats. Just fucking expand the belt. What's the problem?
In like transfer planning, they say like if ever you build a road, or the more roads you build, the more cars that are going to fill it, because you're not solving the issue. You need to really fix it where it is, like, and public transport vision is the way to go.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Basically, we love public transport.
The Snowcast loves public transport because we can drink. So I suppose for my story, I have a goodie. It was I was doing a summer in Portugal where I was working in an Irish karaoke bar.
No way.
Yeah, in Laos in Portugal. Or Lagos in Portugal. It was absolutely savage summer. But we decided to go to this music festival up just outside Lisbon. So I think it was like about 25 minutes, half an hour outside Lisbon. So we went to this music festival, and like obviously it was like right in the middle of summer in Portugal. So it was like so hot. So this music festival was organized so that none of the acts were on during the day because like
the heat,
like,
and stuff.
Heat, like problems with dehydration, all this shit. Like, so what they did was this festival area was maybe like 5-10 minutes outside a local town, and that was like a beachside resort. So what they did was they had organized shuttle buses during the day, because it was like you camp there, so you just wake up in the morning and then like go to the local village and then come back for the night time when it kind of cooled down and they start pulling on the axe then. So one of the mornings, myself and the group that we were with, we were getting the bus from this music festival in Portugal to this seaside town. So we got on the bus, and like, you know, you might be having a few cans in the morning as well, like, and I think everyone on the bus was maybe having a few cans, some were taking a few drugs, everyone was like pretty happy on the bus, like. But the bus was absolutely rammed as well, right? So it was like 5-10 minutes into town. So I had gotten a seat, and it was like one of those seats that is like say the first seat that there's like, say, you know, like kind of where the wheelchair space is and like people stand, like basically. So there's like just a barrier in front of me, no seat, just a barrier in front of me. So I'm sitting there, and there's this girl and this guy standing in front of us. And like, so the bus kicks off and the bus starts going into town, and everyone's having a few cans on the bus, like getting ready for the beach and all this shit, like. So maybe about like 5 minutes into the bus, and the girl kind of like looks at her partner and goes, "I'm not feeling well." and he's like, all right. So
get sick in your hands.
So just to describe what this girl is. Well, actually, I'll describe what the bus, right, is absolutely jammed full of people, right, and all the windows are kind of like closed.
Oh no!
It is like I'd say like
sweatbox.
It's a sweatbox. It's like about 40 degrees Celsius. It's absolutely insane in there.
Smell is heightened, everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So the girl's wearing like classic festival outfit. She's wearing like just a bikini top, and she's wearing these like white denim pants. The guy is wearing a string top, and he's wearing a bucket hat and like a shorts, whatever. So 5 minutes goes on, and she's like, yeah, I'm not feeling well. And she seems okay, but she just says, I'm not feeling well. Then, like, maybe 1 or 2 minutes later, like, you can see her, she kind of starts yawning, and her eyes kind of start, like, closing. And, like, you know, she kind of starts blinking, and then she kind of starts blinking rapidly and stuff. So I'm like, this is not fucking going to turn up well. I was just like, does anyone have water or whatever, like, you know? No. So, like, we all had vodka and shit on.
We got ecstasy. We got MDMA.
Yeah.
Water?
No. So, anyway, this girl, she starts swaying. And, like, the boyfriend's actually, like, paying her, like, not much attention. I'd say I'm paying her more attention than I'm, like...
She's fucking grand.
Yeah.
Leave alone.
So, anyway, so we're, like, literally nearly in the town, right? And she, like, basically her eyes just closed, right? And then, you can see every muscle in her body just relax. And she, like, collapses against the side of the bus and falls on the ground.
Shits
herself. All, like, fucking a stream of shit all over the floor of the bus.
In white jeans.
In white denim shorts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it's absolutely horrendous, right?
Do other people start getting sick?
Well, like, I was, like, fucking right next to it, so I was just like, what the fuck is this? So I did a few times, like, but didn't actually get sick. So next minute, so the best part, so, like, poor girl, this is terrible for her, right? But the best part of the story is that we get there, right? So everyone's just like, oh, fuck, open the windows. Like, everyone's just like,
stop the bus.
Yeah, who's fucking, like, downstream of it, everything. Like, it's just like,
yeah.
So bus gets there. The man opens the doors. Everyone fucking tears off. The boyfriend is still there, obviously looking after the girlfriend, right? And he is, I'd say, quite leery or fucking just absolutely smashed on drugs or whatever, right? So he takes off his bucket hat and starts wiping up the shit.
Oh no!
Oh, worst things I've ever heard. It
was. Jesus, lads, the story's tonight, like, fuck, yeah. Spiders and shit, like, fucking hell.
Mopping up shit with a bucket hat. And where was he putting it? Was he just piling it into a corner? Or was he scooping it up into the hat?
He's probably spreading it around the floor even
more.
Yeah,
he was doing nothing, like, he was doing
imagine the fucking... Everything's finished, everyone's off that, and you have to come clean that smeared shit that's all over the floor. He definitely made it so much worse, just like wiping.
Oh yeah, 100%, yeah.
That's your job.
That's fine.
Scoop up shit.
Great festival, I recommend it though. We had a great day afterwards.
Shit yourself.
Actually, I had one of those situations that you were kind of telling me about earlier on, whereby got off that bus the very last day of the festival, and we were getting the bus back down to southern Portugal. And so, like, tearing to get the bus, really, really, really dehydrated after like 3 days on the sesh. Brought what I thought was a bottle of water with me.
Vodka.
Downed a full thing in vodka. Like,
it was a vodka enema on the bus.
Yeah, yeah.
Just fucking started spraying it all over the walls.
It was horrendous.
So it hits your stomach before you know it, and like you're then too far gone.
Too far gone.
I've got to finish the whole bottle now.
And on that note, I think we'll finish this podcast. Thanks a million, lads, for listening in, as always. DJ will hopefully be back there next week, and normal service will resume. We have a few plans kind of lined up that we're going to keep on the hush, but we're definitely really, really enjoying doing the podcast and stuff. So actually, this isn't the end of the podcast, because the boys from the brewery are on next that we recorded earlier on. So enjoy that little segment. Good luck. Hi guys, and we're back here with Quincy from Wicklow Wolf Brewery, and with Deck from Yellow Belly, the head brewers of each of their respective breweries. Are you a brewer yourself? Yeah.
No, I'm not a brewer.
You're just
one of the founding fathers.
Ah, good stuff.
Was a brewer once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
So, as I said earlier on in the episode, we're drinking Super Soaker. A lot of us here are drinking Super Soaker here tonight, a Blood Orange IPA. So this is a collaboration with Wicklow Wolf and Yellow Belly. Now, the two boys here might tell me a little bit about how this came into fruition.
Basically, we're both mates. Yellow Belly and Wicklow Wolf are good pals, and we go back a good ways, and kind of, I suppose you'd say, we've grown up together. Yeah. And we've come together to do a beer. It's the return leg of the collaboration. We did the Wolf of Mall Street.
Delicious, yeah.
In Wexford a few months back, and Dec came up to Bray a few weeks back, and we did Super Soaker.
Good stuff. Yeah. There seems to be kind of an explosion of like the craft beer industry in Ireland at the moment, and like, you know, you said there that you're after kind of growing up together, and I suppose you're saying growing up together within the kind of craft brewery industry. Do you know, have you noticed that, like, that, you know, there seems to be a lot of help amongst the brewers?
Definitely. Like, as I say, we're all sort of fighting against the one. Well, that's, wouldn't say enemy, like, but you know, like, there's no
the
point.
The dominant
in us,
player.
Yeah, there's no point in us fighting for the same, sure, like 2-4% of tap space that's available for the small brewers. Like, we should be, you know, going for the bigger taps. So it's our avenue of collaboration. Is like, although we collaborate on beers, we'd also, like, you know, share recipes or share yeast or sort each other out the hot contracts or share contacts and stuff. So it's a very friendly industry. And I sort of suppose it's counterproductive to business, where you're helping your competitors, as it were. But if you see yourself sort of, you know, as the head above everyone else, it doesn't really matter. Like, so.
And do you get a good bit of crack from experimenting and, you know, stuff like that? Like, what percentage of beers would you say that you trial out actually go to market?
100%.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, like, so it's like a trial batch for us now is about 900 litres, like, and we'd always be fairly confident that it might be based on a recipe that we tried before or a combination of our ingredients that we tried before. And sort of fairly, like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm not going to jump straight in on the big kit, because like we have our original 900 litre and we have the 5000 litre kit, so I wouldn't jump straight in on the big kit with a new recipe. But I suppose, like, that's collaborations again. It's about pushing each other's boundaries and stuff that you wouldn't maybe have done before. Like, our first collaboration was suggested, like, oh, I really like Black Forest Kettle. I was like, is that possible? It's like, yeah, fuck yeah. So then myself and Wicklow Wolf's new head brewer there, John Allen, sort of put our heads together, and we were like, all right, fuck it, let's try and make it taste like a Black Forest Kettle. And in the same, like, I think it was actually a joke at the start. We were like, somebody mentioned, we have like a Wicklow Wolf and Yellow Belly group, as it were. We chat in WhatsApp groups. And somebody suggested, why don't you do like a really, really low ABV beer and sure, fuck it, like, make it taste like Super Splits. And he was like, no, can't be done. Meanwhile, me and John were texting each other, being like, right,
let's go for this.
Like,
and it's worked out good.
Yeah.
It is fucking delicious. Like, yeah. It's actually like a proper Super Split, like, you know. And in terms of, like, you know, do you have anything else kind of in the pipeline, you know? Like, do you know, any trade secrets that you want to give us?
No trade secrets I want to give you, but, you know, we're always kind of coming up with new ideas, and some of them are mad and stupid, and some of them are not. But that's where the biggest competition is between all the craft brewers, is around creativity. Yep. And it fucking drove me nuts when they come up with a beer and called it Great for the Town. Love that name. Best name of a beer, but you have to be a Gulchi. Yeah. If you're from Dublin, yeah, you don't know what that means. No, it's the best name for a beer ever. Great for the Town. It's brilliant. Oh,
you can always do Great for the Parish, man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's done now. It's done. Can't go back. No, but that's where the big competition is. It's around new beer styles and names and shit like that.
Quite a lot of breweries that would always be chasing to, you know, be like chasing the next big style, like glitter beers or brute IPAs, or, you know, just trying to be fucking like, okay, what's massive in America at the minute, right, let's fucking do this quick before somebody else does it. So I think there's quite a lot of rushed sort of new styles that are coming out, but there's a lot to be said for, you know, knocking out solid pale ales on your core range.
Get back
as well,
to your like, good basic West Coast IPAs and traditional beers.
I think a lot of people have forgotten about the word bitterness. Like, yeah, it's like most of the fucking IPAs I taste now are just nice and fluffy
water
and fruity. Like, yeah. This is also my release of a fucking orange one. Like,
there's a lot to be said. My brother it comes from a chefing background and whatever, but he trained in Ballymaloe under Myrtle Allen, and her philosophy was simplicity and let the food do, let the ingredients do the talking, and then you're away. If you do the simplicity, pair the right things together, serve it, cook it well, and it's sourced well, and like that's it. Like, do you find that in beer? I watched an interesting documentary there recently called Somme on Netflix about sommelier and wine, wine smelling, drinking, pairing. Do you find that in beer, that things generally tend to match well together, like one hop with one fruit, or for example, you did blood orange with an IPA,
vanilla.
Do you find that in beer, that there's matching as well in terms of
definitely
flavor?
Like, I suppose like I personally would look at beer in the exact same way as I would look at food. It's like, you know, if you're cooking dinner, like what's going to go well together, or if you're baking a cake, like what works together. Like, so it's all about trial and error, the same as it would have been in brewing. As again, myself and Quincy would have came from home brewing sort of backgrounds, like way back, but and then it's there where you're doing your experiment in the same way as you would experiment in the kitchen. Like, but again, it's like the whole thing, like quality ingredients make quality beer if you do it right and stick to your recipe and just use
keep your housekeeping right. And but also, I mean, with trends and that, I prefer the old traditional styles. We never did a New England IPA for the simple reason everyone was doing them. Yeah. I said, fuck that, I'm not doing what everyone's doing. It was a mistake in hindsight because everybody wanted it, you know. But I mean, that's a New England style beer. It's the first one we've ever done, you know. I'm not a big fan of it, of the style, to be honest with you. That's worked out really well. But you kind of have to do what people want as well, and it was a mistake I made. I said, no, we're not doing it because we're not going to do what everybody else is doing, but we probably should have, to be honest, you know.
So we're also down here for a tap takeover, right? And so I've kind of noticed as well, there's a lot of kind of events and like festivals and stuff. Are you enjoying that? Are you enjoying coming down and, you know, meeting other breweries and, you know, or is it a bit of show and tell for yourselves, you know?
Well, tap takeovers are great crack.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all pals here, and it's great to see five or six taps of Wicklow Wolf. You know, we'd always have one tap here, maybe two on occasion, but you know, it's great to come in and see a bank of Wicklow Wolf taps where you wouldn't have seen them before. And you know, showing off our beer to people down here that maybe haven't tried it before. Festivals, some are good and some are crap, you know. What I hate are the beer wankers that come up and try and tell you how expert they are at beer and how Deck and I make a balls of it and do it wrong when they know nothing, you know, most of them. But some of the festivals are great fun. Others, I don't know what Dick thinks now, but
No comment. Well, I think it's quite apparent that anybody doesn't do a lot of festivals in Ireland.
Yeah.
We do a handful of very slack festivals because again, like, they're run by a fucking monopoly with a majority, like, you know, interest. But again, no comment.
Yeah. I suppose as well, you want to stick brewing, like, you want to be, you know, if you're being pulled off everywhere.
Well, like, don't get me wrong, like, like, we absolutely love festivals. Like, you know, it is, again, it's great to go to parts of Ireland that you wouldn't normally be in, but I would much rather do tap takeovers, like, where you go to a pub in a local town and you're not charged to get in, you're not charged for the glass, you're not charged, like, twice the price for a fucking smaller measure. Like, I'd rather, like, as Quincy was saying, come in, take over six taps in a pub, like, have six of your best beers, meet the people there face-to-face and have a proper chat and, like, not that busy atmosphere. Festivals have gotten very much about the fucking profit for the organisers, in my opinion. Like, if you go over to England, the beer festivals there in the summer is you're going to a local pub and there's 45 different fucking beers and they're all sold out in 2 or 3 days. So, like, I much prefer that model of beer festivals than the Irish model, as it were. Don't get me wrong, like, there's some festivals which are inviting people from, like, you know, breweries from all around the world and encouraging them to bring their best beers, and, like, I love those festivals, but not the just pile it high and pack them in and
get as many in and charge as much as you can for them.
Right, so my last question then is, right, if you had 1 pint only of each of your own breweries and one of each other's, what would be the pint? What would be the
are you allowed to choose a vintage?
Yeah.
Alright, I would say Strachey Ace circa 2016.
See, that was the original Strachey, yeah. And that was a higher ABV.
And it was fucking gorgeous.
Gorgeous beer.
It was one of the quickest selling beers in Simon Lambert's, our sister pub.
Yeah.
That was our last tap takeover, actually.
That's right.
It kicked in a couple of hours. Like, that was
gorgeous. We've tamed it down a little bit now for more broader appeal.
Okay.
I'd have two beers of ours. I'd have Sriracha in the winter, and I'd have Castaway all summer. I drink it all summer.
Castaway is my favourite beer ever. Yeah. It's fucking delicious. I absolutely love it.
But I drink either of our beers.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Good stuff. Yeah,
boy. And I'm loving all the new beers and stuff as well, man. Like knocking out some great beers now.
Yeah.
And Dick, what about your own beer?
I was out of the pen, man. Like, I fucking, after work especially, or after a brew day, like, the brewery fridge, as it were, which is the fridge which is hid away behind the mast on that nobody can see, is just full of Keller. Like,
Like,
especially when you're fucking, like, just finished digging out the mast on and, like, rushing to get everything finished before the last bus, like, can of Keller is nice. It's like low ABV, really refreshing, nice and cold. And that'd be my go-to beer from where I was, right?
Nice, but
I
love all things. Yeah, like, refreshing beer.
But then, again, like, we proper condition it for weeks and weeks. And, like, I noticed most brewers would sort of go to a well-made lager, because it sort of shows the flaws in your brewing much more than any other style would as well. Like, and they are
refreshing. There's no place to hide.
Exactly. No.
Well, not like anything fucking sour and acidic has given me, man. I'm a big sourpuss.
Cool. Anyway, thanks a million, lads. I really appreciate you having me on. And
thanks for having us.
I'd say we might make a trip to both of the breweries at some stage and go on the lash.
Welcome anytime.
Since your colleagues are always more than welcome.
Right, yeah. Quincy, thanks a million.
Pleasure.
Cheers, pleasure. Lads.